Hello, Jordan.
What's up, Michael?
Bro, how does it feel to just be dialed in life?
I'm not dialed. I knew you were going to say that. I'm not dialed, dude.
You are so impressive. You wake up early, take
the dog out. Dude, can you stop? This is a terrible way to start the episode.
It's such
this
a
is
fun
just the
way
worst.
It's such a fun way for me, though, because because you're killing it.
Well, I appreciate the kind words.
Yeah, but let's go in on this. I think everyone might be able to learn something.
How to become a personal trainer podcast.
How to become a personal trainer by looking at the day-to-day habits of one of the great personal trainers.
We could talk about my previous day-to-day habits from like 2011 to 2018. My habits now are not like the grinding habits of someone early on in their business venture.
Yes, they are.
No, they're not.
They are. Someone who's a little more balanced.
Yeah, much more balanced now. I'm maybe a little bit too balanced, if you know what I mean.
Maybe optimal. You might just be optimal right now. And
could be.
You know, we spoke about it this morning. I'm just very impressed. And so I thought maybe we could dig deeper into those day-to-day habits and routines, but maybe that'll be another episode.
Yeah, seems like today, make that episode 1000 or something.
Maybe 171, which is just a few in the future. But
we'll see.
Yeah. I like the humility. That's, I mean, hey, we can learn from that too, right?
What's up with you, Mike?
Mike, I don't think you haven't called me Mike since 2016.
Since you were taking, what was that pre-workout you were taking?
C4.
C4, yeah. You were a real Mike back then. Now you're Michael.
I still like the C4. It's just got a little too much artificial sweetener for me. I get enough in other places.
Mm. Where do you get your other artificial sweeteners?
That's not where we're... I have this awesome opening idea, and Jordan's like, no, let's redirect it to something we've talked about 47 times in 168 episodes. Like, oh,
what
man.
Else are we supposed... We had a big list to talk about today.
Oh, I have a list. It's right in front of me.
Good.
We're going to start with Jordan's strongest held conviction. Not actually, but maybe one of, that tax is theft.
Oh, yes. Yes. Because last time I brought this up, you were like, well, I don't know. But now you're on board. You believe it.
Nah.
Wow. Dude, you change it up. As soon as we go recording, you change it up. When off recording, you're like, dude, I agree. It's theft. Now you're recording. Now it's different.
Well, I said I agree in this like hype conversation we were having around tax being theft. There's a difference between bantering with the boys and really thinking about what you actually believe on something and being like, yeah, tax is theft versus, okay, I'm going to think through this, is tax theft? So I'm going to make an argument for tax being for federal income tax. First of all, this is your idea. Why don't you outline your position first before
I
get into anything?
You're getting into a really good point. I want to hear what you're saying.
No, I want to hear some of your. I want to hear some of your points first.
You just started. I just want to keep. I want to hear this, and I'll adjust as needed.
Basically, based on very limited research, it seems like there are a substantial number of people who don't believe that federal income tax, which is tied to the 16th Amendment, which was ratified in 1913 in the United States. There's a substantial group of people, and I don't know if they're out of their mind or if they have a point, think that that amendment wasn't actually ratified by 3/4 of states, which is what's required to ratify an amendment. And so that would be an argument for federal income tax being legitimate theft.
Like if they just did it anyway without what they needed to make it happen.
Correct.
So that's you're going to the base of like, all right, was it actually ratified or not?
Correct.
Whereas I'm not thinking about that perspective. I'm not thinking about, for example, I'll give another example. Like, let's just say it was ratified. Let's just say that it was, and let's just say that legally they're allowed to do it, right?
Okay.
There are many laws that I think are stupid laws, right? Like laws that have been brought into legal power. For example, like I don't think people should be put in prison for having weed. Like I don't think that I think that's stupid. And there are still people to this day who are serving sentences because they smoked marijuana. It's different mm-hmm. if you're distributing and selling, and that I think it's a different story. But there are people in prison to this day who are in prison because they smoked weed, which is like, I think that is wild. And I think that obviously is not theft, but I think that is criminal. I think that someone going to prison, I think that the government putting someone in prison for that is criminal. And now it takes it to another level where so many states have legalized it.
I'm with you on – I think we're all on board with the marijuana.
So this is where my – we're all on board. Move to the next fucking point, Jordan. what I'm saying is, regardless of whether or not it's legally allowed, the concept is what I disagree with, if that makes sense. You know, where it's like the concept of what is what I believe is theft. And there are so many other places where I'd like to see my money go. And I remember you, Gary, and I had this conversation years ago. It was probably 2017 or something, where it'd be wonderful if you got to choose like a charity, or you got to choose a way to spend your money on small business, or on you got to choose like, hey, you could send it to the fire department, or you could send it to teachers, or you could send it whatever. You choose where your money goes. That mm-hmm. I would have no problem doing. But I think one of the major issues that people have with tax is not just that the money is being taken, but that it's being used for things that go against everything they stand for. And we don't even know where it's going. We don't even know what it's being used for. There's two levels to this. Number one is that it's being taken, period, which is a potential issue. And number two is that it's being taken and being used in a way that is potentially definitively corrupt, and we don't know where it's going, and blah, blah, blah. That's like are the two separate issues that I have with it.
Okay. So one of them, let's talk about the first one, which is the fact that it's being taken at all, because
yeah,
I think that's more interesting and even more controversial, perhaps.
I agree.
What would a world look like without any taxation? Meaning, you know, there are people who are extraordinarily libertarian who do make this argument, but that basically means there's no military. That means that the road or it's doesn't all privatized, right?
It's all privatized. It's a free market. Yeah, it's where you could people who wanted to do it or could they would essentially compete for the ability to they would compete for the opportunity to do it best and in a free market,
and so you believe that with education, you believe that with roads, you believe that with public utilities, that like all of these things should be privatized essentially.
I'm not going to go that far. I'm not going to say I believe that it should be, but I do hear so, and I understand this is conflicting. I very much understand that it's conflicting. Okay. On one hand, I don't want the taxes taken. On the other hand, well, it's like, okay, If I had to give an answer right now, if I had to give a black and white yes or no, which I don't think it really is that simple, then I would say yes, I think it should be privatized. I think it should be privatized. And I think that think about it. Like think about how little teachers get paid, right? Teachers get paid way too little right now. And I think that if it was privatized, and I mean, even from what I can tell, because I have my entire family is on my mom's side is education. Almost all of them are education, principals, superintendents, professors, teachers. Generally speaking, private school teachers have way better pay, way better work schedule, way better benefits than public school. And if it were privatized, I think that people, or especially the teachers, would number one, be incentivized to stay up to date with the curriculum. They would be stay incentivized to do their absolute best because I think it would be based on job performance rather than just, okay, you have this job now, you get tenured after a certain amount of time and then boom, you're good. I don't like that at all. I think it's terrible. I have firsthand experience with that. And I think that, and I'm not saying there would be zero problems with this. I think there would definitely be problems, especially in lower income areas, and there'd be many issues with there are issues with everything. I think there'd be issues with this, but I think that on the whole, it would be better than and teachers would be compensated more fairly, and it would actually inspire them to do better and keep learning and really uphold the high degree of training that they need in order to be an amazing teacher. Right now, like at least in my experience, I didn't have that many amazing teachers. I can count on one hand from elementary school to college how many amazing teachers I had. I have a feeling if teachers were more, at number one, if they were paid better and if they had more incentive to work harder and to really do an amazing job, right now, why would they have an incentive? Like, they're paid like shit. Why would they even want to? I think if they had an incentive to do it and there were more competition to be a good teacher, then I would be counting on 12 hands how many amazing teachers I had over that time period.
It sounds like taxes theft is a nice slogan, but at the heart of it, you could say what you believe even more firmly is that your current tax dollars are not distributed in the way that you
Correct.
Find optimal.
100%. Yeah, that's exactly right.
It's more a problem about the efficiency of government and the way that they spend your money rather than the fact that you have to pay anything.
Correct. 100%. That's exactly right.
That makes sense. Cool.
What about you?
I got another topic for us.
Oh, wow. We're just breezing right on. You don't have anything to add to that?
We're 11 minutes into this political thing, and no, I don't. I don't have anything to add to that. Creatine gummies. I can't believe you don't know about these things.
Yeah, I haven't heard of those.
That actually makes me extremely happy that you don't know about them, because your engagement with your audience, I find, is a good proxy for trends. Mm-hmm. And the fact that no one is bringing this up to you is a good thing. Basically, 2 or 3 months ago, I saw a tweet with quite a bit of engagement on it from an account that didn't have a massive following about how awesome creatine gummies were. I don't remember the exact tweet, but something to that effect. I was like, what is this? And realized the person who tweeted it was the founder of a creatine gummy company. And I was like, okay, this makes more sense. And I was like, why is it getting so much engagement with his not very big following and the fact that it wasn't like, I don't know, I didn't think there were compelling reasons in the tweet. And it was supported by people outside of the fitness space who are affiliates for the brand, who have big Twitter followings, big email lists, whatever.
That
I was
makes
like,
sense.
Oh, okay, this is like starting to add up. I was like, what are the benefits of these things? And basically, there aren't any additional benefits over just a powder creatine that you're mixing in with a shake, right? It's just more convenient. There aren't physiological benefits to taking gummies with creatine in them compared to creatine monohydrate
Correct.
That like we've always taken. The cost difference is unbelievable. Mm. And I only know one company that sells them, and I'm not going to name them here just because I don't even like bad publicity is publicity. I don't want to give them any exposure. But for one bag, which is a 30-day supply at 4.5 grams of creatine per serving.
Per gummy?
So
okay.
3 gummies is a serving. So 1.5 per gummy, 3 gummies a serving, 90 gummies in a bag is $70. Which
Holy
is
shit.
Which is nine, and creatine in general is more expensive now than it was, you know,
when
three
we were,
to 8 years ago. But even like, you know, pre-2020, I feel like it climbed at a pretty high rate. It's 9 times more expensive than creatine powder. So
That's insane.
I wrote the numbers down here, like the one that I have used just because I trust the company and their reasonable prices is Optimum Nutrition. I buy it on Amazon. You get 120 servings. Which is 600 grams of creatine for $37.
Wow.
So it's 6 cents per gram of creatine in the powder versus 52 cents per gram of creatine in these gummies.
That's insane.
Insane. And
that's absolutely
insane. What pissed me off about it the most, I think there's two things. One is
you're paying a couple bucks for one serving of creatine.
Uh-huh.
And that's crazy.
Insane. What upset me about it was, one, I think I just have this worldview around cost cutting and personal finance of unnecessary things being a good way to achieve freedom faster in life. And so there's a mix of that with seeing these non-fitness people peddle it to their audience knowing how much they're getting to promote it to their email lists. Like that gave me that AG1 feeling of like, this has to be such a high margin product. $70 for 90 gummies. I cannot imagine what their COGS are. Like,
yeah,
there is no way that their cost of goods is more than $10 a bag. Mm-hmm. And I would imagine it's like less than five. And then with all that margin, $70 a bag, less right. than five, they can pump that into ads. That's why they can pay these affiliates so much. So anyway, I had a client who asked me about them and I was like, I'm not a fan for these reasons. And he was like, I think it's kind of a cool idea. I don't mind spending the money. Like, I like the idea of it. Is it okay on a physiological level? I was like, yeah, I don't see anything wrong with it if you're cool with spending the money. And so that was the third touch point of how it got on my radar. So he likes it, which is great for him. But for most people, I just don't think they make any sense. And yeah.
Number one, completely agreed on all of that. I'm glad that I've never heard of it, or at the very least that I've heard it so few times that I don't remember it. And then to take it in another direction, why the fuck does everything have to be gummied? Like, I was talking about this yesterday. We were taking a CPR course yesterday, and we were talking about not only, it wasn't only CPR, it was also first aid, choking, poison. We were talking about poison control, all this stuff. One of the poison control issues is kids getting into the gummies, their vitamin gummies, and eating a whole container of vitamin gummies. Mm. And the woman teaching the course was like, if you get vitamin gummies for your kids, and I meet it, I was like, I'm not getting my kids vitamin gummies. They're not going to have vitamin gummies. If they're going to have vitamins, they're not going to be fucking gummies. But and we can talk about that in a second, but it was important information. She was like, if you do get them, get the ones without iron, because if they have iron and they take a whole container or have a big handful, whatever, then they need to go to the ER, get their stomach pumped. If it's without iron, then they should be fine. Their pee might be like green because they have just all the shit in it, but like they'll be fine. Whereas if there's iron in it, then you can really overdose on it. And there's a big problem. But back to the gummy, like, why does everything have to be gummied? Like, I understand it's easier for your kids to take. I get it. But number one, if you're in a first world country, everything's fortified, you don't even need the multivitamin in general. Not to mention, you're just giving them candy. It's just fucking, and I don't think it's a good idea I think it's unbelievable marketing. It's an incredible sales tactic. It's fantastic. But it's marketing and sales. It's not actually for health. And I think gummifying everything and just giving kids and adults these gummies, like, just fucking take the creatine, put it in your damn water and just drink it. I don't get it. I don't get it. And it really infuriates me.
Yeah. I think it's the candifying of something to make it more enjoyable, to link pleasure with a good, supposedly good habit. I haven't thought this far ahead, but I would imagine, like, even for kids, if they're eating a nutritious diet, the addition of a multivitamin probably isn't necessary.
Correct.
If they are, like, how would you, if you were to have your kid have a multivitamin?
You almost just busted out her name. I saw it.
I didn't. I'm dialed. I almost didn't even say Kurt's name here on the pod.
How would I get her to take a vitamin?
Yeah, because they can't swallow a whole vitamin until a certain age, I would imagine. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I probably wouldn't. I'm not giving her a vitamin. Like, no, I'm not doing it until she can, obviously, and I'm not gonna like have her do a gummy just because. Like, I'm number one, just making sure she's eating an overall nutritious diet, which, so far, hasn't been that difficult. I don't know. Oh, wait till you have another one. Every time I've done something, wait until this time. Like, before I had a kid, wait until you have a kid and then you won't be able to work out. Okay, I have a kid and I can still work out. Wait until you have this, right? It's like, wait until you have a puppy. It's still work out. Wait until this. It's like, there's always something. Wait until. So I have another one on the way. Bezrat Hashem, everything will be fine.
But that's a function of you getting feedback from hundreds of thousands of strangers.
Correct.
Like, you're just going to have people with such a wide array of opinions. Yeah.
But either way, like, I'll wait until they're at a point in which they can take a multivitamin, which again, like what a blessing. We live in the United States. We're in a first world country. Things are fortified. It's pretty easy to get everything you need. I think children's multivitamins are like athletic greens. It's just, you don't need it. Now, if you're growing up in a third world country and like you are, your diet is lacking something significant, there are things that you can do in order to make sure that happens. And if the only way for your child to get vitamins and minerals is through a gummy, great. Absolutely. Do it for sure. But like, it's not outrageously difficult for a child in the United States, assuming assuming they're not starving and they're not homeless, right? Like we're assuming the average individual, they're fine.
Yeah, you're applying the third world country logic to poverty. Correct. Within the United States as well.
Correct. And there is obviously severe poverty and homelessness in the United States for children, but I'm talking about generally speaking. Yeah.
Yeah. Makes sense. Talk to me about video games.
I can tell based on the tone of your voice what it, like that it's going to be something you're trying to figure out if I'm going to be upset by it. Talk you to me about it.
I can lead on this one, actually. So okay. I, in the last 4 days, downloaded, I think, the first ever cell phone game.
No way. You didn't tell me this.
That I've ever downloaded. No, I haven't.
Why wouldn't you tell me this?
It's brand new for the pod.
Did you deliberately not tell me for the pod?
No, I just didn't think it was that interesting. But I also know that you have experience with video games, and talking about video games in general is interesting.
Was it a hockey game?
No. I downloaded Yahtzee. I'd played it before.
Okay. That's like the most mic game. That and chess are like definitely like video games that you would play.
So I play Yahtzee. You know, my sisters like it. So we'll play if we're doing a family game night and we're not doing a board game or cards, because I'll push for cards. We'll do Yahtzee like 1 out of 10 times. There's this Yahtzee cell phone game that is, it's like Yahtzee on cocaine, and like there's just all flashing this and these colors and all of this stimulation added. There's levels to it. You win prizes. It's unbelievably addicting. You're going against the computer, but then you level up like a video game. It's not just normal Yahtzee.
Right.
And so I found myself, and the whole point of the game is to make money. And the two ways they make money is,
oh wow,
they like run real money? Ads. For the company. Yeah. The two ways they make money are through ads, or they try to get you to buy dice in this game, which is, I know people, I guess, supposedly spend money on these fictitious cell phone games. I've heard of it. But dude, it's addicting. I can see how they get you in so many ways. Yeah, so I was noticing my own behavior, like time spent on the game, and then you run out of dice and it's like, okay, you can't play again for 2 hours, and there's a countdown until you're allowed to play again, but you can buy 30 dice for only $2.99. And then even within the Yahtzee game, it's because it's fun. Each level gets harder. Are you familiar with Yahtzee?
No.
Okay. For anyone who is, they in this game, there's multipliers, it's like if you're
is
good
at problem
yeah if you're good at probability and statistics, there's like optimal ways to play each turn, which is true in general in Yahtzee, but the equations become even more complex and like fun to figure out. And then there's the rewards through like getting prizes and leveling up in the game. Anyway, I gotta delete this thing off my phone because otherwise it could ruin the rest
of my
life.
Have you been playing it?
I've been playing it for the last 4 days, yeah.
You play it today?
I think I played a little bit today. I've started to realized maybe 2 days ago, like, oh, this could be extremely dangerous. And so I've been cautious.
Yeah.
Probably played for an hour yesterday. It takes like 5 minutes to play one game. I think I played one game this morning while the coffee was brewing. And I was like, got it. Enough of this. I got to do some work. But only because I recognized, I mean, I'm on level 49 in 4 days. So there's. Anyway.
How many levels are there? Are they infinite?
Who knows? I then Googled to see if anyone else could. I was like, Yahtzee insert game name is extremely addictive. And there's a whole Reddit thread of.
Oh, really?
I'm so pissed. I've spent so much money. Like, I feel like the whole point of this game is just to make me a gambling addict, like da 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 da. And then all the replies are like, yeah, me too. This happened to me. I spent this money. Like, it's very addicting.
Oh, man. Mm-hmm. Wow. I mean, you know, I think in 2020, I spent like $200 on a shooting game after a while.
I never knew you spent money. I knew you spent lots of hours on that game. I didn't know you spent money on that game.
I spent money on it. Yeah, because you were like, I've heard. No. And I was like, he knows I spent money on this game. Yeah. I was playing this shooting game and like I was really into it. And it was 2020. And after a while, like I was like, you can like buy this gun and like it's gonna be like it's got this much hit power and da da all. And I was like, all right, fuck it, I'll just crush everybody with this gun. And I got the gun and it wasn't even really better than the other guns, and so I still like wasn't dominant. I was like, and it was like, well, you can buy this gun now, and so it just kept doing that. And I spent like $200 on this freaking game, and then I was like, I'm done. This is terrible. I can't believe I spent $200 on this game. I'm out.
It's almost like the 2020. It's like a modern version of something that had more purity to it.
Meaning. Yeah.
Meaning media in the 90s wasn't addictive.
Yeah.
Media now on our phones is.
Super addictive.
You know, Super Mario 1 on regular Nintendo wasn't as addictive as these games now that are, and they're trying to get extra money out of you. It's just.
Yeah.
I don't know. It just feels dirty to me.
Yeah. Now I play Call of Duty on my phone. But it's not nearly as addictive. Like one game can take like 20 minutes mm-hmm. and I just play one game at a time and like, that's it. And it's nice. It's not asking me for money. It's not, and I like at most I'll play like 45 to 60 minutes in a day. Yesterday I didn't play any, but like,
well, and spend the day. That's the way that video games should be used, right? As like
yeah.
a little bit of enjoyment, a little leisure, a little break during the day. That makes sense. I suppose it's a combination of one, the right game, and two, you being in the right place in your life, maybe, to not get addicted.
Yeah. It's also like after one game, like I don't want to play again. It's also really interesting. So this is in order to start the game, it takes several minutes for the game to actually start. They've got to get 100 people in. So 100 people are playing against each other. So it takes a little bit of time for 100 people to join, and then it loads out. And so by the time the game starts, it's already been like 3 minutes or so, which is a while like for a game to start. And then the first few minutes of the game are you just going around collecting your equipment. So before the game really starts, it's like 5 to 6 minutes. And it's like after the game ends, I'm like, I don't want to go through that whole freaking process again. Like I'm done. I had my time, I'm out onto the next thing, like whatever I need to get done. So it's actually really interesting because I think if they wanted to make it more addicting, they would just make it faster. Start the next game, like immediately, like don't, no time to think. So it's very interesting how that works.
Yeah. Good on them for the designers not making it as addictive.
Hopefully they don't hear this and change it. Designers of Call of Duty Mobile listening to the How to Become a Personal Trainer podcast.
Speaking of designers of Call of Duty wanting to become personal trainers, you had on our list to talk about today, maybe the pros and cons, or just speaking in general about owning your own business.
Oh, yeah. I was doing an Inner Circle Live on Monday, and one of the women in the Inner Circle, they can ask me anything. And what she asked me was like, hey, like, can you talk about like pros and cons of owning your own business? And I was like, oh, this would actually be a fun conversation for the How to Become a Personal Trainer podcast. Do you want to start? Or you want me to start?
Up to you. I'm a P, man. You know that I just go with the flow.
I'll start with what I like initially spoke about on the Inner Circle Live, and we'll go back and forth and add some stuff as well. But what I really hit home on a few days ago was that, like with everything, there's pros and cons. And I think Gary has really been pretty outspoken in recent years in terms of how being an entrepreneur is now something that's like looked up to and aspired to be. Whereas for a long time, it was, if you say you're an entrepreneur, like you're a loser, no one wants to be an entrepreneur. Like it's, and so now it's become this status symbol to say that like, you're an entrepreneur, you have your own business. And it's almost like negative now if you work for someone else. It's funny. It's similar to renting. Dude, people look down on people. Like, homeowners often look down on renters, which is very interesting. Like, homeowners will be like, you're an idiot. You're paying someone else's mortgage. It's like, yeah, but they also didn't have to put a huge down payment, and they can take this money and they can invest it elsewhere, and they don't have the stress and anxiety of having to fix up their home. Like, and I think many homeowners, and keep in mind, I'm building a house. Like, I get it. Like, I'm a homeowner, but many homeowners have been like brainwashed into thinking that this is an amazing financial investment, just owning a home. And like, it's not necessarily an amazing financial investment. There's a lot of stress that comes with it. There's a lot of anxiety that comes with it. It could end up being, if you end up selling it, you could make a profit, but you could not, depending on where the market is and what's going on at that time. So it's not a guaranteed. And I think a lot of homeowners, they really get into the sunk cost fallacy, where it's like they've put in all this time, all this money. They've really bought into the societal idea that owning a home is the pinnacle. And then as soon as someone says, well, I'm renting, they're like, oh, you're a loser. You should buy a home. And so I think that's sort of where we are with entrepreneurship, where it's like people are looking down on people who work for someone else. And that's stupid, because for some people, it's a much better option. Working for someone else generally means that you don't have to work as much. The stress of putting all the fires out doesn't sit on you. You don't have to be working on the weekends necessarily. You don't have to be working out of the office necessarily. You have your job, you get your job done, boom, it's done. You don't have to think about it outside of work. Whereas if you're running a business, you never stop thinking about it. It's always on your mind. It's always up to you. You're the person, you're the man, you're the woman behind like who everything has to happen. And it's insanely stressful. Like, no matter what, it's insanely stressful. So I think the pros really start to come if you can make it past the first, like, probably 5 to 7 years. The major benefits start to come if you can make it past that first 5 to 7 years or so, and it's different for everyone. But I say 5 to 7 because some people will have really early success, and then it dwindles off. Like, they might have a lot of success the first year, first 2 years, first 3 years, but then years 4, years 5, years 6, and so on, like, starts to dwindle. They didn't actually do it right. So I think after 5 to 7 years, if you can really maintain it, that's when you'll start to notice the benefits of potentially more freedom, being able to delegate more, hire out. You have more opportunities to find balance probably, but it comes after, I think you put more work in those initial 5, 7, 10 years than most people will put into a 40-hour a week job for 20 years. Like, you smush so much time and energy and work into that time frame that you front load it, and then you get the benefits of ideally not having to work as hard. But again, that's not everybody, and it depends what type of business you have. But the pros and cons are very real. I don't think it's for everybody. But if you don't want to be constantly on call, you definitely don't want to be a business owner. That's for sure.
Man, well said. I'm on board. I think there might have been one small thing I disagreed with in there related to the first handful of years. Only because I hated working for someone else so much that even when I moved to New York City, had an unpaid internship to start, like, didn't really have money coming in the door. Even when I did, was making substantially less than I was at my full-time job, working more hours, under more stress. I was so much happier with the flexibility, meaning if I'm going to work 100 hours instead of 60, but I get to pick when those hours are, and I get to wear whatever I want, and I get to sit however I want, and I don't have to go to lunch at this time with these people and eat this low protein meal that, like, everyone can't, like, having control over every decision was such a benefit for me that even with the downside, I still, like, it was night and day more enjoyable.
Yeah. That makes sense.
One thing that I think is overlooked about having your own business and maybe around security is what Taleb talks about in Anti-Fragile, which is, you know, if you have your own business, people think of that as riskier than working for someone else, because It's a 9-to-5. You get a paycheck. Paycheck comes every other week versus you could have customers cancel when you have your own business. You can have good and bad months when you have your own business. But there's a binary element to a salary, which is you either make the salary, meaning you're employed, or you make zero if you get fired. Whereas in the example he gave in the book, it was a taxi driver, but you can apply it to any job. When there's a recession or when there's an economic downturn or when unemployment's high, when things are going poorly on a macro level, your business isn't going to zero. Your business might take a 30% haircut, right? Mm-hmm. You might be doing much worse than you were last month or even 50%, but you're still in the game.
Right.
You might have to work more hours. You might have to adjust your strategy. You might have to, you know, spend very little to bridge the gap until things are better on a macro level. But when you are a salaried employee and things get bad and there are layoffs, you go from making your full salary 100 to making zero, which is
right.
a different kind of risk that people don't fully understand. Instead of going from 100 to 60, you go from 100 to zero. I think that's something that is understated in the discussion.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing, having worked in corporate and worked for myself, the amazing thing about working for yourself, and then I'll give some cons, is you are rewarded based on your effort. Whereas in most corporate jobs, there's not a linear relationship between what you bring to the company and your compensation, essentially. Meaning mm-hmm. you can be the absolute best in your class, but oh, we cap raises at 12%, or even be a phenomenal negotiator. Like if you dominate your own business, you can see 100% growth year over year.
Mm-hmm.
In almost no industry does a salary employee see 100% raises year over year. Like mm-hmm. just doesn't happen. And so the fact that entrepreneurship is almost more fair and more merit-based.
Yes, correct.
If you kind of stink, and obviously it takes time to build a business, but if you've been at it for 5 years and you haven't gotten any traction, that's the market telling you what's happening versus.
Correct.
Yeah, there's just a more direct relationship between your performance and your compensation with your own business rather than working for a boss.
Correct. And I think it's an important point. It's like, it's definitely, definitely more fair, right? Like there's no nepotism. Mm-hmm. It's the market.
Politics,
it's
HR.
None of that. It's like the thing that you said that I don't think it's based on effort. It's based on skill, right?
Or so results, it's like, result, or, which is a combination of all the, yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
It's not just effort. Yes.
Right.
Output.
Exactly. It's like mm-hmm. someone could be super, super good or even,
and
for example, yeah, and work less, right? Or even like we see the people who like have insane physiques and, you know, they've worked hard on that, but we also have someone who doesn't have that physique and they still work really, really hard and they're not really good on camera and they can still do it. It just usually takes a lot longer. And
it's not just effort. You're absolutely right. It's the combination of things. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. And in addition to that, and again, this is, it's the most fair thing there is. It's the most fair, like way more mm-hmm. fair than working in an office for sure. The thing about being fair is it doesn't always go your way, which is like, it's fair in that if you work hard and you're good, it could be outrageous and you could get that 100%, 200%, 500% growth year over year. But if you're not good, like you could not make anything. And like, that's very real. So it definitely does go both ways.
And that doesn't mean you can't get good.
Correct. It just takes time.
It does mean that like, yeah, it's not a slam dunk over heavy. Like there are definitely people better suited for working for someone else compared to working for yourself.
Which is so funny. I love that you brought up fair because I hadn't thought about it in terms of fairness. It is the most fair thing ever. It's the most mm-hmm. fair thing when it comes to business, which is funny because you hear about people in the workplace being, oh, it's not fair that I get paid this much and you get paid that much. It's like, yeah, I mean, you signed up for it to not be fair when you signed up to work for me. Like, right? It's like,
yeah,
you're working for someone
yeah.
else. It's not fair inherently. Because like,
absolutely.
That's yep. what you signed up for.
Yeah. And even in a bigger company, it exists more, which is
yes.
politics. Like, perception doesn't equal reality. Someone might be extraordinarily skilled and dominant on their work, but they appear to be lazy for whatever reason, versus someone who's more socially savvy, is replying to messages at 10:30 at night, like is on email all the time, but they're not actually bringing value. But oh, he looks like he's killing it. He always replies fast. It's harder to know who's good and who's not good.
Yeah.
Like, and there's just so much. Well, I guess likability is helps you both with your own business and in corporate. Another con. Go ahead.
I was going to say, like, Gary's brought up a really good point too, which Gary's super upfront about. If you have someone who's the best salesman in the office, but they're a cancer to the office, you fire them, which like might sound like it's not fair, because it should be that whoever is bringing in more money to the office should like get the promotions. They should be there because they're contributing the most to the company. But if people don't like them, if they are causing more harm and disruptions in the office, and they're not being positive to the office as a whole, even though they're the best salesman, get them out, which might not be fair based on their performance. But it's not just about performance. It's about everything that's going on within that office and how you're impacting other people in that office. So I just love the concept of fair, because I think inherently as humans, we want what's fair. And if you're working for someone else, it's inherently not fair.
And working for yourself is.
Yes, correct.
Yeah. A downside, or something most people would view as a downside to having your own business, and you touched on this, but it's 24/7. Like, in a 9-to-5 job, in many 9-to-5 jobs, I have a lot of friends who work 9-to-5s and have never opened their computer after 9-to-5 Monday through Friday.
Yeah.
Who've never worked on a weekend, who've never like had to work out, had to take home the stress of work outside of the hours that they are working, versus having your own business, especially when you're building, but even once it's built, like,
correct,
you're still on all the time to some capacity.
Yes.
And I don't even know how many years I worked every single Saturday and Sunday, and still usually put in at least a couple hours on every Saturday and Sunday. Just part of the game.
Yeah. And like someone who's working for a company would feel really upset. Ugh, like, this isn't fair. I'm working on this Saturday and Sunday, versus like, cool, so don't do it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, but when you're working for yourself, it's like, it's not a matter of fairness. Like, this is mine. Like, I've got to do this. And like, this is what's got to happen. It's,
I want to build this. It's like, okay, if I have a client request come in on a Saturday, am I not going to reply until Monday at 9 a.m.? What if they're replying to multiple coaches?
Like, yes.
Or, you know, with current clients that you're working with, maybe they email you on Saturday morning, you see it, you can get back to them quickly. And it depends how you set your business up, but you're going to benefit more from working more, and the success of your business is going to benefit from you working more. And so, it's there's definitely downsides. Oh, I got another downside. I actually feel this way. There's a push and pull on freedom. The pro is that, you know, freedom in general just seems like a good thing, right? I don't have to do what my boss tells me. I don't have to work at these times. I can work whenever I want. I can work wherever I want. I can go on a beach and I can work from Thailand for a month if I want to. Like, there's these freedoms. This, and by the way, you can't do that because you actually can't even see the screen when you're sitting on the beach and the sun's reflecting. But I know that's been sold to a lot of people, versus the downside of all that freedom, which is very little accountability.
Mm-hmm.
Like, no one's cracking the whip on you. And I know a lot of people who are motivated by having, you know, I don't want my boss to be mad. I need to get this done by this time because this is when I was told to get it done. Whereas if you're working for yourself, you need to build your own accountability somehow, because you don't have someone telling you exactly what to do and when to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%.
You got anything else on having your own business? I feel like that was a good subject.
Yeah. I mean, I think I'll finish with, like, it's, for me, it's without a doubt the right thing. And not just because of what I've done, but because I hate having other people tell me what to do. Like, I hate it. Mm-hmm. I absolutely despise, and I've hated it since I was a kid, whether it was in school or when I've had odd jobs here and there, when I worked in other people's gyms. I hate having someone tell me what to do. And so I'm the one telling me what to do now. And that's it. And like, that's wonderful. And that for like, I feel like it probably would have been more stressful for me to work for someone else because I would have just absolutely hated it. It just wouldn't have been good. Whereas this, like, I got to build it. And even though it's still unbelievably stressful at certain times and very, very difficult, I think it would have been more stressful to hate what I do and to have to listen to someone that I didn't like and be around people that I didn't like. And be, I think that would be way worse for me. So there's also the other side of it, though, which is I started it when I was a teenager. And I didn't have a wife and no kids, and I had much more freedom. Whereas if I was starting it at 32 years old with a wife and a daughter and another one on the way and a dog, and knowing how much time and effort had to go into it, I'm not going to say it wouldn't be worth it, but the expectations would have to be very different in terms of the rate at which progress would be made. It'd be very different than what it was when I first started. Never mind the difference in how social media is now, how platforms work now. The rate of growth would inherently be different. I'm not saying it's not worth it, but I would have to be working when I would otherwise be with my wife and child, which is like, that would be what I would have to do in order to make it work. And if that's not something that I was willing to do now, because, you know, you only have kids for a few years before they're, yeah, like, I think JP talked, you have them for like 5 years. Innocence is gone. Like, a lot, you start to see innocence diminishing after like 5 years or so. Those first 5 years are so special, so unique. It's like, okay, is it worth it for you to not spend as much time with them? Like, for right now, like, I haven't been going to jujitsu because I have a guy come here train with me once or twice a week, but I haven't been going to night classes because that's when we put my daughter down. And like, I'm not willing to miss putting my daughter down even a couple nights a week just because I only have a few years of this. So it's like, I would rather not get as good at jujitsu now and put my daughter to sleep and then just maybe do that on the back end. So, which I think is a perfect parallel to like, I would rather not build that business now, just suffer through working with these people and doing what I need to do to pay the bills. And then once they're a little bit older and maybe more independent, depending on how things go, then I can start building that business. But it really depends on the person.
I think we talk about balance within a career and within a lifetime rather than within a day. I think that if you were in that position at 32 with no business, with your current family and situation, I think you would just build your business slower.
Yeah.
I think you'd have to have balance within the day. And that might mean you go back to college style 4 a.m. wake ups and you get a certain amount of dialed focus work in before your family's even awake. Like, you would find ways to get it done that wouldn't allow you to grow as fast as you did from 2016 to 2018, 2019, when you were doing nothing except working 18 hours a day. But it's a rate issue, right? It's a rate and an expectation issue. How fast can you expect to grow? And and having proper expectations, knowing that, okay, obviously I'm not going to be able to outcompete this single person who does nothing except work, but I'm not comparing myself to them. I'm trying to achieve balance here in my own life.
Yeah, 100%.
Because I don't think you'd work for someone else, even if you were in your position right now with, like, not to mention, you'd be gone during the day, every day,
Correct.
5 days a week.
Exactly. Yeah, fuck that. Absolutely not.
Good episode. We got a mentorship Q&A in 11 minutes, so we're going to get that set up. Thank you very much for listening to the podcast.
Well, hold on. Before we sign off, we're going on a mentorship Q&A right now. Just so you're aware, we are going to be doing a sale for the mentorship soon. We haven't done a sale in how long has it been?
9 months, I think. July.
9 months. So candidly, the mentorship's been going really well. It's been going really well. The members are absolutely freaking crushing it. It's amazing. And we didn't even realize that we hadn't done a sale because we usually do several throughout the year. And then we were like, holy shit, we haven't done one in a while. So we have one coming up soon. things are different now because in order to join the mentorship, you have to apply. So if you would like to join, start sending in your applications now, and we'll give you the details. We'll announce when the sale is live, but just start sending in your applications. The link is in the show notes if you want to go to the website, send in your applications. But we'll have a sale coming up with, I don't know, what do you think, a month or so?
Yeah.
Probably within a month. All right, start sending your applications now, and we'll give you the date and all of that when you'll be able to join during the sale. But like always, once the sale goes live, or sorry, once the sale is over, it's over, price goes back up to normal. So if you send in the application and we send you the dates and everything that the sale is happening and we announce it here, do not hesitate. Once we say it's live, it's live, and once it's over, it is over. And every time there are people, oh, can we get in? Oh, no, sale's over. And we give you plenty of notice. So letting you know now, get your applications in, link in the show notes, and that's it.
Yeah, that's fitnessbusinessmentorship.com is the URL. Link in show notes.
Have a wonderful week.
We'll see you next week.
Talk to you soon.
Bye, everyone.